Totally Football Show European Edition. Today we're asking, how will Coutinho fit into Bayern? What next for Neymar? And should everyone just stop playing football and watch João Felix at Atleti? Plus, Wolves at Torino and big things growing in the nether regions in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Hey, listener, well done for joining us. We've got for you today, Julien Laurens is here.
Bonjour.
Alvaro Romeo's here.
Hola.
Later on, we're going to have Raphael Honigstein on the phone and Mikael Jongsma telling us all about the Eredivisie. Do you know they're already three rounds into the Dutch Championship? And also back with us today is James Horncastle. Great to see you, James.
Great to be back, James.
That's nice. What a weekend, eh, around Europe. A lot of people saying, oh, the European leagues, they're all a foregone conclusion. Ha! This weekend, none of the reigning top five league champions won. First time that's happened since 2014. Now, Juve admittedly didn't actually have a league match. PSG, Jules, we'll hear later on about what happened to them at Rennes, a 2-1 defeat.
Shocking.
Bayern got held a 2-2 by Hertha and went out and signed Coutinho. And Barcelona lost their opening game of La Liga.
Thanks to a great goal from Mari Chaduriz, 89th minute, and he had a fantastic bicycle kick that made San Mamés roar.
Excellent. Well, I tell you what, Alvaro, in honour of that, let's begin with Bilbao bagging three big points against Barca. What a start to La Liga. First game in 1920. The champions go to the Basque country, Alvaro, to take on Athletic Bilbao's All-Basque 11 and a beaten 1-0 thanks to an 89th-minute bicycle kick scored by a 38-and-a-half-year-old in his last season before retirement. Wow. Alvaro, you were telling us all about this extraordinary man's career the other day, and he comes on, what was it, in the 88th minute?
Yeah, he came in the 88th minute, I believe, and he scored a minute after he came in, 65 seconds to be more precise, with a beautiful bicycle kick. A week after he announced that he was going to retire at the end of the season, he scored this goal that gave Athletic de Bilbao three very valuable points. Athletic de Bilbao needed something like this because last season it wasn't very good, especially the first third of the season was catastrophic, and beating Barcelona is something that doesn't happen that often. In fact, Athletic de Bilbao is always powerful at home, but beating Real Madrid, Barcelona or Atletico is not taken as a must at all. If anything, like, manage to get unbeaten against them is all right. But, so beating them in the 89th minute is something really powerful and magical over there, yeah.
And keeping a clean sheet as well, which is no mean feat, even if Barca were without Leo Messi.
They were without Lionel Messi, but also Dembélé, Antoine Griezmann and Frenkie de Jong were there. So they had enough talent to try to win the game. And they played really badly. Athletic de Bilbao put the pressure really high up and Barcelona couldn't cope with it. And I saw, again, the mistakes that last season were costing Barcelona a lot, especially in Champions League tires. They were slow when moving the ball, and they were lacking some vitality as well, some vitality that I can see in Manchester City, in Liverpool at the time, both pressing to get the ball back. Barcelona doesn't have that. And I'm not too sure that Antoine Griezmann is the player Barcelona needed. Probably they needed a very quick winger and not a player who will basically play where Lionel Messi plays, when Lionel Messi is back. So I think that there are few structural problems at Barcelona, that the quality of Messi has been disguising and concealing for many years. And when Messi is not there, you can see what the problems are.
Interesting. When was the last time they failed to win their opening game of a campaign?
That was in 2008, when Pep Guardiola took over Barcelona, and they lost the first game of La Liga, they drew the second game of La Liga, and from that point on, Guardiola started, you know, moving like a wheel, like a machine, and destroying every rival.
Well, plenty of time for them to sort things out. However, this weekend, their rivals in Madrid both won. And let's talk about Atletico first, because a lot of people talking about them as the real contenders to take away Barca's throne.
That is still to be seen, I believe, because Diego Pablo Simeone hasn't won the title since 2014. Some say that he doesn't have the quality of Barcelona and Real Madrid, but he has been given plenty of players in that process, and he's never been able to win the title again. But, well, there are some really promising prospects, and one of them being Joao Felix. Mm. Yesterday he did an amazing run that led to a penalty that Álvaro Morata missed. But he is a player that brings a lot of joy to Wanda Metropolitano. And he couldn't finish the game because he had some cramps. But 70, 60 minutes of joy, Felix, were enough to know that he won't be the next big thing. He is already a really good superstar and a really good player. So I would say that he's not a prospect, but he's a reality.
I thought he was amazing in the game. I have to say that run, especially because he took on three players, and it's the pace in which he runs with the ball. We often talk about Kaká and how similar to Kaká he is in many aspects, not just looking like him, but also the pace he has running with the ball is just outstanding, and all the skills and everything. And that was just the first game. You can just imagine in 10, 15 matches when he'd be more used to playing with the rest of the team, more used to the Simeone method, more used to La Liga, more used to everything. It's just going to be outstanding. And he didn't come from far because, you know, from Portugal to Spain. But you could have thought, okay, we'll have need a bit of time to adapt and everything. It didn't need any of that. So
just 19 years of age, Atletico did get a 1-0 win. Morata scoring the only goal of the game with the assist from the other young revelation of this side, Kieran Trippier.
He was very good. He played really well for Atletico de Madrid. And I read an interview yesterday to José María Jiménez, who is a centre-back playing for Atletico de Madrid. And he says that Kieran Trippier is making a huge effort to integrate quickly at Atletico de Madrid. And he already drinks mate, which is a very typical Uruguayan drink. So apparently he's spending some time with the lads after training, just trying to integrate there. And he played a good game, Kieran Trippier, in the same way that Atletico showed that they still have, and they will always have under Simeone, that powerful defense. They were playing with one man down, as well as Getafe, in the whole second half, but they didn't concede any goal opportunity.
Are Atletico the best-placed team this year? That's a question that's doing the rounds at the moment.
I still believe it's Barcelona.
Really?
I know that Barcelona has some structural problems and some good stars are aging. They are in the wrong side. Well, they are 30 or 31, 32, like Messi, Luis Suarez. But still, Atletico de Madrid is still to be proven. They've got many new players that we don't know how they are going to turn out, the likes of Lodi, the left-back, who, by the way, was sent off yesterday. The likes of Joao Felix, well, we know that he's good, but still, do we know if he's going to be solid for 38 games? So there are many questions at Atletico de Madrid, whereas Barcelona has been winning the title 8 times over the last 11 years. So I think that makes them favourites.
Okay. Speaking of Madrid-based former Spurs fullbacks playing an important part in a victory, how about Gareth Bale, who got a start for Real Madrid and set up the opener in a 3-1 win at Celta Vigo?
Yeah, no one expected that, because a month ago Gareth Bale was pretty much out. At least he was out from Zidane's plans. But something has happened this summer. Real Madrid couldn't offload the player, and he stayed, and I think that Zinedine Zidane is being quite pragmatic, keeping the player and using him.
The sooner he goes, the better.
Yeah, but
that was back a few weeks ago.
3 weeks ago, and yeah. Everything has changed completely. And sometimes there are things that trigger these situations, like, for example, Eden Hazard getting an injury. Obviously, Gareth Bale wouldn't have featured or wouldn't have started if Eden Hazard was fit. And Luka Modric got sent off for a straight red card in that game for stepping on the Achilles tendon of Denis Suarez, which means that he will be missing 1 to 3 games for Real Madrid.
Alvaro, I was quite intrigued reading some of the transfer gossip over the weekend about Jovic. There was already reports of Jovic being linked with a loan move to Fiorentina, and this is a player that, yeah, they've only just signed, they've spent a lot of money on. I know he came on for the final 10 minutes of the weekend, but is that serious? Are they really thinking, actually, yeah, he needs to go and play somewhere else in order to develop into the player that could be a Real Madrid number 9 in the future?
I really don't think that's going to happen. No. It's true that there is no patience at Real Madrid. Mm. And it's a club that lives by what happens. Yeah, what happens in the present is what counts. And it doesn't matter what happens a week ago. But this Jovic thing, I don't see it happening. Because Real Madrid needs pretty much a striker who can deputise in case Benzema is not available.
Real Madrid ahead of Barcelona for the first time in, is it 74 game weeks?
76 games 76. And 818 days, according to Marca.
Brilliant. Okay. Other news Valencia got hit by the latest goal ever recorded in the Liga. How late was that?
Yeah, it was in the 100th minute, as far as I can recall.
Right.
Yeah, and it was a goal from Oyarzabal, Real Sociedad striker. It was a crazy aggregate time between Valencia and Real Sociedad. Valencia was winning 1-0. They had the opportunity to score a second goal in the aggregate time, but Kevin Gameiro missed that penalty. And 6 minutes later, it was Oyarzabal who scored from the penalty spot for a 1-1 draw between Valencia and Real Sociedad.
Wow, okay. Anything else we should know about opening weekend in the Liga?
Well, a few interesting things. Soldado and José Lu, two former Premier League players, were in the scoreline, which is good for the clubs they play for.
Crazy scoreline, no?
One of them, Granada-Villarreal, was 4-4. Yeah. Six goals in the second half. Yeah, that was one of the highlights of the weekend, definitely. Sevilla won under Julen Lopetegui, and they had 7 new players in the starting lineup, which is not bad. One of them being Fernando, the former Manchester City central midfielder. And the newly promoted teams, they all managed to not get beaten. There were victories for Osasuna and Mallorca, and Granada managed to get a draw against Villarreal. So it was a pretty good weekend for newly promoted teams.
Brilliant. Okay. After this, let's hear about the opening weekend in the Bundesliga.
It's nice to have a break from advertising, so here's some classical music. Nice. At Paddy Power, we thought football shirts could use a break from advertising too. That's why we've sponsored Huddersfield Town's shirt without a logo and started the Save Our Shirt campaign, where any football team that Paddy Power sponsor will be, well, unsponsored. Don't you wish we weren't on your shirt too? Now, let's get Bark to the music. Paddy Power, enough of the nonsense. 18 plus, begambleaware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Hello?
Who's there?
It's Raphael Honigstein.
Raphael Honigstein! Thanks for calling in, Raf. Whereabouts in the wide world of football are you?
I'm in Huntington Beach.
Damn. All right,
California.
What a place to be as the Bundesliga season's just getting started.
Working hard.
Were you able to catch the opening weekend and, for example, Bayern Munich's clash with Hertha Berlin?
Of course, James, of course. The minor matter of 8 hours time difference does not stop me watching one of the Bundesliga.
Excellent. All right. And particularly a season opener like that. I see that Robert Lewandowski became the opening scorer of a Bundesliga season for the 5th year in a row. Is that because Bayern always play first or something?
Yes, exactly. The champions play first. So it's not a total coincidence.
All right. Okay. But the good news kind of finished with his two goals for Bayern Munich. They ended up with a 2-2 draw against Hertha.
Yeah, it was a poor result. I mean, Bayern didn't play all that badly. They created a lot of chances. They started really well, but they conceded two very stupid goals, then only managed to equalize early on in the second half when everybody thought, okay, this is now the onslaught. They sort of failed to produce, and they left the game not just having dropped 2 points, but still wondering why it is they cannot find better solutions against deep defensive teams. The story replayed itself from last season in many ways, where Bayern going forward just look a little bit short on ideas, short on creativity. And the only sort of positive coming out of this was after the game, when they confirmed that Coutinho has been signed on loan, and maybe less excitingly, Mikael Cuisance, French youth international, will join as well. But that managed to paper over the cracks a little bit, but would still leave a lot of people concerned, I think.
Jules, should Rafa be getting excited about Cuisance?
Cuisance, yes. I thought he did really well at Gladbach, especially the first season he arrived there from Nancy. He was a key member of all the France youth teams, and then went to Gladbach because he didn't want to sign pro for his club Nancy.
Okay.
I think it's a good move because he's got a lot of talent.
All right, Rafa, we're talking a second about Coutinho, how that one's going to work. But while Bayern drop points, they're two biggest rivals in most people's predictions, both had big wins. Dortmund 5-1 against Augsburg and RB Leipzig 4-0 against your friends Union Berlin.
Yeah, very impressive from both teams. First of all, Dortmund, you know, they started really badly. They conceded after 30 seconds, some really sloppy defending. But then unlike Bayern, they recovered and they played some beautiful football. I mean, Favre will find ways against most defensive sides. His team move as a unit. They have a sort of a game plan that you can see. It's not just putting in crosses, as Bayern have resorted to all too often. And it was hugely impressive, not just the result, but the performance. And of course, it looks as if they might be able to take advantage of that Bayern weakness that we saw on the evidence of the first game. But with Leipzig, it was a similar story. Everybody expected them to struggle a little bit against Union, who had their first Bundesliga game, who caused a lot of noise after 15 minutes when the boycott stopped. And Leipzig basically took the lead and never really looked back. Union had a few sort of half chances, but Leipzig's footballing quality and under Nagelsmann, some kind of tactical accomplishment that you could see, they changed things up quite a lot during the game. They couldn't cope ultimately. They didn't seem to mind all that much, because the occasion sort of was the big thing for them. But Leipzig looked pretty good.
Raf, there was a lot of interest over this first Bundesliga clash for Union. The opening 15 minutes with this boycott, that was a boycott against the kind of their plastic opposition. Is that a fair summary?
Yes, absolutely. They didn't like the fact that they were given that game against Leipzig in their first Bundesliga game. They see it almost as if the occasion was a little bit diminished or cheapened by that. They regard Leipzig, as many sort of traditional football fans do in Germany, as an artificial construct, as a marketing vehicle. They don't consider them a real club, and you know they're so extremely positioned on the other side of the scale, if you want, with that strong bond between the club and the fans and all these things. So it was always going to be, I think, an opportunity to make a statement that they don't like the sort of team. But after 15 minutes, they basically stopped and just started supporting it their side. And the atmosphere was still amazing. Some of the Leipzig fans complained about their ears ringing because it was so loud, but it wasn't ultimately enough, unfortunately, to help their team to get anything from it.
All right. So some really nice gestures as well. Rafa, why was it that the official attendance was so much higher than the capacity?
Well, they counted some of their dearest members who'd passed away before the club had made it to the Bundesliga. There was banners in the stadium recognizing them. There was a white banner for every member who didn't live to see the day of Union playing in the Bundesliga. They were held up and commemorated that way, which was one of those very unique and very moving things that came out of this game.
Beautiful. All right, well, let's have a quick word about Coutinho, part of the reinforcements for the champions, which also include Ivan Perisic, but most attention focused on the Barcelona midfielder. How is he going to fit in? Is it a loan that they're intending to then make as a long-term deal, or is it just a stopgap until the likes of Sané are available? What are your thoughts?
It seems to me more of a stopgap solution. Of course, if he works out fantastically well, then they have the option to buy. As they found with James, an option to buy doesn't necessarily mean a lot if the player doesn't want to stay. I think Bayern, towards the end of James's stay in Munich, didn't want him necessarily to stay either. But the point is that it is an option that might not be relevant. What is, I think, really necessary is to have someone who provides that bit of spark, provides a bit of creativity. They've changed, if you will, the strategy from signing wingers and real wide players and Sané or others that they looked at, and they've gone more for a number 10. Of course, he can play out wide, and I guess the thinking is that against most teams, Bayern won't have a lot of space, and maybe a number 10 type player will be more beneficial than having a fourth wide player. I can see that to a certain extent. At the same time, Niko Kovac has not really shown too many signs of playing that kind of football with that dominant sort of number 10 in the past. James struggled under him. Müller took a long time to get going and now plays mostly wide. So it's not an immediate fit that sort of screams, okay, this is exactly what they need. But I guess the pressure was on to deliver a big name and to get something in terms of attacking a quality that they found that a more opportunistic move was warranted in this case.
Pretty exciting signing for Bayern, though, no? From a fan's perspective.
It's exciting, although I think it might be overplayed a little bit. I think Niko Kovac said the whole of Germany is happy that Coutinho is coming. I'm not sure about that. Hasan Salihamidžić said he was the outstanding player at the Coppa. Now, I didn't see much of the Coppa, but my understanding was apart from a couple of free kicks, he didn't do a lot for Brazil. So I don't know if the hype is necessarily in line with the reality here. But of course, it is a name. It is somebody that comes from a big club. It's somebody that commands a huge value as a player. And to get that into the Bundesliga is a coup of sorts and kind of helps Bayern to feel that they're still a superpower and still very relevant. But I don't think it necessarily solves some of the underlying issues which we A, saw against Hertha, and B, much more difficult to solve when it comes to the authority of Kovac, for example, and the lack of joint-up thinking at board level. I mean, these are structural problems that will, I think, continue to dog them throughout the season.
I thought was really funny was when Bayern put out the statement saying we were not going to reveal any details of the deal, and then Barcelona put out a statement saying so it's an 8.5 million euro loan fee, and Bayern are going to pay all their wages of charge, and then there's an option to buy 120 million euros. So good for Bayern not to want to reveal anything, but the other club clearly didn't get the memo.
No, and they also basically revealed the deal during the game. Because Barcelona kicked off more or less the same time. And it was the Barcelona speaker on television who basically said, yes, this deal has gone through. So for once, I think Bayern, they weren't happy that they didn't break it. At the same time, they were quite happy that they could just turn up in the mix zone and says, yes, this is happening, rather than talking about something that might not happen, which has been their downfall throughout the summer with deals that ultimately fell apart. So I think this is one that they can live with.
Rafa, have a super time in Huntington Beach, and hopefully you'll be back with us next week, yeah?
The week after, James.
Ah, all right then. Okay, well, happy trails. Next up, let's hear about a huge weekend in France.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Ballon pour Traoré, le passeur décisif sur le but de Nyang, Bourigeau, Camavinga, petit ballon par-dessus, et Del Castillo qui s'élève et qui après moi prend le but.
Big weekend in Ligue 1. Paris Saint-Germain losing there at Rennes. Monaco also lost again, and Lyon beat Angers 6-0. Six is on fire from the Kings of Lyon. Hey, that's my headline. Let's start, though, with Sunday night and that incredible win for Rennes. To put this in perspective, PSG didn't lose a league game till February last season. They didn't drop a point until December. Only took 2 weeks of this campaign, though.
Yeah, it was shocking. The performance was shocking in terms of collective, in terms of motivation, in terms of everything. Rennes is a bit of a boogie team. They beat PSG in the French Cup final back in May. They gave them a lot of troubles in the French Community Shield as well.
Bête noires.
Bête noires.
We call them.
Yeah. Yes. Yep. Bête noires, that's right. And they did it again on Sunday at home where with a very good game plan from Rennes, who, you know, all the players worked really well, five at the back. They were very efficient going forward. They have this incredible talent in midfield, Eduardo Camavinga, who we will talk about him a bit later. But from PSG point of view, it was really, really poor performance. And it was the first time they lost so early in the league season since 2011-2012, when they lost on the opening game at home against Lorient. They ended up not winning the league that year because Montpellier won in 2012. In 2016-2017, they lost at the end of August in match day 3. Mm-hmm. Against Monaco away, and they ended up losing the title that season to Monaco as well.
Jules, what are you saying?
This one is match two. I'm saying that unless they wake up and Thomas Tuchel finally becomes a manager again, because right now he's at best a football manager player, but not a very good one anyway. Yeah, unless he becomes a manager again, like a proper one, unless they all wake up and stop relying completely on Kylian Mbappe because he can't do everything by himself, and unless they sort out this Neymar shizzled very quickly, it would be a poor season. You could see already that they're not up for it.
Wow. We'll come on to some of those questions very shortly, but let's talk about Eduardo Camavinga. MCR ABC says, is Camavinga now the hottest property in Europe? And for how long can Rennes realistically hold on to him in the current football landscape?
For someone who's only 16, who last year became the first player ever born in 2002 to play in one of the big five leagues, And already you could see the talent, and same with the Rennes youth teams. He's not playing for France youth team yet because he was born in Angola and moved to France with his family when he was only 1 year old, and he's still waiting for his French passport to go through. But that should be done very quickly now. But he's an incredible talent. And
what kind of midfield talent are we looking at?
So he's a left-footed sort of box-to-box player, but who very much like the modern midfielder. He can sit back really and play in a very defensive way,
right?
Because he's very strong and he has a big engine and he runs a lot and he reads the game really well. He can also go forward with that left foot, as we heard on that second goal from Rennes, who he gave a lovely assist to Del Castillo. He can create. He didn't misplace a pass at all on Sunday night.
Incredible.
He bossed that midfield like rarely anyone has done before against PSG in the last few years.
Also registering an assist at the age of 16, the youngest player to do so in Opta's records.
He signed a new deal. They were very clever. They gave him a new deal where they extended his professional contract 3 or 4 days ago.
Right. Their backer, tell us a little bit more about who is behind Rennes, because I wasn't figuring
that. Salma Hayek's husband.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, the Pinot family, one of the mm-hmm. richest families in France, who owns loads of luxury brands.
Gucci, luxury brands,
and you know, all sorts of very expensive things. They've built that empire a long time ago, and they're from Rennes. They're Breton. They're from Brittany, and the club was bought by the father, so Mr. Pinot Senior. Now the son is in charge as well, Salma Hayek's husband, and it took them a long time to finally get success. For a long time, they spent a lot of money on players that didn't really work out for them. Same with managers. But in Julien Stéphan, the son of Guy Stéphan, who is Didier Deschamps' assistant with the national team, they found a really bright young French manager. And finally, all the recruitment they did and being clever, the chairman is the former PSG sporting director, Olivier Letang, who's doing a great job there. They've built a very, very competitive team, and they won the Cup last year for the first time in years against PSG, and they had a very good success in the Europa League, only losing to Arsenal in the second leg after beating them at home in the first leg. So things are looking really well. They've got great fans, great ultras, great cup, and it's good to see how well they've played yesterday. And the academy is one of the best, not just Camavinga, who joined the club when he was 10, but they've got loads of other very good talented players that they play in the first team, like Jolin, for example, who again we heard on the little clip. So it's a very, very good project right now.
Okay. Lyon, with that 6-0 win against Angers on Friday, that's their biggest home win for 13 years. Speaking of not misplacing a pass, Jason Denier completed all of his 114 pass attempts against Angers. That's the first time a player has made this many passes in the same game in the top five European leagues without missing one since Opta began analysing these competitions. Incredible.
It was excellent. Yeah, Slovenia gave him the armband in the start of the season. We didn't know who would replace Fekir as captain after he moved to Betis. And Denayer was maybe not the favourite because he's quite a quiet guy, the Belgian international, former Manchester City player, who actually never played for them. But he has the charisma and he's improving very quickly. And what was, I thought, fascinating about Friday night game was not just the result, 6-0, and they were very clinical, and Angers were a bit all over the place after losing Jeff Reyna-Adelaide, former Arsenal player, to Lyon, although he didn't play that game. But it was the reception that the Groupama Stadium gave to Juninho. It was Juninho's return since he left the club as the legend, as he was a player, but now as a sporting director, trying to build this new project as well and bringing Silvinho with him and, you know, buying all those players in the summer. And the reception from the fans was just incredible. They had that incredible banner and, you know, welcome back, Juni, and all the chants were for Juninho. And he looked very emotional, to be fair. It's something that French clubs have rarely done, bringing old legends. And you see with PSG, for example, where former players are, until very recently, very absent to that Qatari project. But I thought it was very clever from Lyon to finally go and get Juninho, who was always made for this kind of role. And let's hope for them that it continues like this, because so far, 3-0 at Monaco, 6-0 against Angers, they're looking really good.
Nice to see them bring back former Glazers. When Thierry Henry went back to Monaco, remember that was some really heartwarming scenes. At Lyon, they finished 19 points behind Paris Saint-Germain last year. Mike says, though, do they have a good chance of winning the league, though, this season? That's what, 9 goals scored and unconceded in their last 2 games now.
Yeah, and in Moussa Dembélé, they've got maybe the most informed striker, most informed player, I guess, with Kylian Mbappé. So far this season, he's scored 2 more goals. Mm. Since the league started, they've been well-organised, well-balanced. There's nothing, you know, it's not Pep Guardiola kind of football, but it's a very good, solid football, and Dembélé is very good. And you could see already what Silvinho is trying to do, and they're working really hard. So they will push PSG, I think, you know, unless PSG wake up,
for quite a while.
Wow, Barcelona wobbling in La Liga. Bayern, who knows what's going to happen there. And PSG potentially seeing their grip on the title slip away.
It's the Neymar saga. I think Thomas Tuchel keeps saying, oh, it's not a problem for my team. It's not a problem for me, for the players. I think it's really disturbing. It's disturbing for everyone. His friends and the other Brazilians like Thiago Silva want him to play and he can't play. He's not even there. He doesn't train with the team. I think it's a complete mess that is also reflecting on the form of the team. And with all the other issues like that dependence on Kylian Mbappe is far too big. The Thomas Tuchel weird thing that he stopped coaching everyone and all of that. It's not good for PSG right now when the others are picking up form.
And it is a big deal for Barcelona as well. Still, I go back to summer 2017. They haven't recovered from that summer yet, in the sense that Barcelona never thought that they could lose a top player to PSG. That happened. And the other day against Athletic de Bilbao, no one was looking at Griezmann or at De Jong and saying, these are the new players, let's put our faith on them. They were wondering where Neymar is. And on Monday, there was a meeting at Barcelona headquarters, and the outcome of that is that they are going to present a new offer for Neymar on Tuesday. So that could be one of those decisive steps in an attempt to get the player.
But can they afford to have that outlay on Griezmann and then come back in for Neymar as well?
It would have to be a loan.
Yeah, it would be a loan.
Hence the meeting. That's why they were discussing how possibly they could do it financially. Because obviously getting a player like Neymar now, as much as they have managed to get rid of Philippe Coutinho's wages, getting a player or signing a player like Neymar at the minute for Barcelona is impossible.
But the loan is not going to happen. PSG are not going to... Well, right now, they're saying they're not going to loan.
They'd rather have Neymar sit out the season or be unhappy?
Yeah, but he can't be unhappy for too long either. It's not in his interest or the Neymar brand or PSG team or the Brazilian team that Neymar doesn't play at all this season. So he might sulk a little bit, but there will be a point where he will want to play again, surely.
I mean, he's a professional, James.
That much is true. Previously beaten by Lyon 3-0 in an earlier round on Monaco. They went out and bought Ben Yedder, who was playing this weekend, as they got beaten 3-0 again by Metz. Who are they going to buy this week, Jules?
Yeah, it's a good question. They're expecting more players. Timo Bakayoko, who they're trying to get back from Chelsea on loan.
The name I've got here is Mauro Icardi.
Only if Falcao leaves, and even if Falcao leaves, I'm not sure Icardi would want to go to Monaco, to be fair.
Icardi only wants to stay at Inter or go to Juventus, and that's it. Even Napoli, I think, have been quite frustrated because they're very intent on making an offer, giving Wanda a role in one of Aurelio De Laurentiis' films.
Nice.
And yeah, ultimately, it doesn't look like it's going to happen.
To be fair, even if Icardi was coming to Monaco, he would get no service. So even a genius like him in front of goals couldn't score many goals because there's something really deeply wrong about that team. You know, Lyon to beat Monaco, you think, okay, it's the first game of the season, Fabregas got sent off. But for Monaco to go away to Metz, who are back in the top flight, and to lose another player, red card, Ruben Aguilar, who was sent off as well, and to lose 3-0 as well, was pretty shocking. Jardim has a lot of work on his hand, and they will sign more players between now and the end of August, beginning of September, but I think the problem is far deeper than just new players.
James and Jules, you're both going to be adding some continental flair to our first Totally Football Show live event of the season. I'll be joining you, as will Duncan Alexander, on Monday, September the 30th. And listener, if you'd like to be part of this very special evening, then you can acquire tickets now at southbankcentre.co.uk. Just search on Totally Football Show. You probably don't need to. It probably comes up with a big banner picture of one of us. It's me straight away.
Is this the same venue and same time as last year when we did this and it coincided with the FIFA Best Awards, which was next door?
It was next door.
Yeah.
The best is in Milan, I think, this year.
Yeah, oh, okay.
It's Milan, yeah. Yeah, it's in Milan. We're not going to Milan. We are going to Liverpool in November when, Jules, you and the Klopp Whisperer, a.k.a. Raphael Honigstein, are going to be on board for that one.
Yes.
So you're popular with the... well, everybody, really.
Can't wait.
Anyway, we'll have more details on that later on, but ring this one in your diaries. September the 30th, southbankcentre.co.uk. Oh, hello. Sounds like we've got another call coming in. Hello?
Hello, it's Michael Jongsma.
Hey, yeah. Mikael Jongsma. Excellent. Hey, Mikael, thank you so much for calling in. Because you guys have been playing football for, 3 weeks now already in the Eredivisie?
Yeah, absolutely. We like to start the league quickly when the kids are still on their holidays, so they can watch a lot of Eredivisie football.
Right. And what kind of thing will those kids have been seeing in the opening rounds?
Well, the first round really threw up some upsets with Ajax, PSV, and Feyenoord all dropping points. But, I mean, 3 weeks in and it's back to the usual with PSV and Ajax joint leaders, although Ajax are actually top and PSV are sharing the second to sixth spot with four or five other teams. It's quite crowded up there.
Right. Ajax, indeed, who scored 9 goals and conceded just 1 in their last 2 matches. They seem to have survived that run of summer sales pretty well.
Yeah, absolutely. They've been quite smart in their approach of the window. In general, they have been a bit of a scattergun when it comes to their transfer policy. They've bought a lot of players to replace Matthijs de Ligt instead of one very expensive one. The main candidate to replace Matthijs de Ligt there should have been Edson Alvarez, a Mexican international who was also catching the eye from, for example, Wolverhampton Wanderers. But for now, it seems like Per Schuurs is the new hot thing in town, a center back that joined from Fortuna Sittard last season. Ajax, I mean, you can see that they're playing a different type of football compared to last season. It's a little less controlled because of that Frankie de Jong-shaped hole in midfield, but it's again very fun to watch.
Excellent. Van der Beek's the other name that's still being linked with a move to away, even at this late stage. Real Madrid supposedly interested in him. He did feature in the team at the weekend in the 4-1 win against Venlo.
Yeah, and he's been progressing so well over the last year. It's quite remarkable to think around this time last year he wasn't even sure of a starting spot, and now he's one of the most sought after midfielders in Europe. Honestly, it seems quite likely that he will stay because Ajax are a good place to be at the moment. They've managed to extend the contracts of several of their key players, including Hakim Ziyech, which is probably the one that everyone is most surprised by. And it wouldn't surprise me if Donny van de Beek would decide to stay for at least one season.
Brilliant. Okay. Can you tell us a little bit more about VVV Venlo?
Well, VVV Venlo is a world-renowned team for Kaiska Honda, mainly. And Ahmed Musa, former Leicester City, was actually there as well. But these days, it's the temporary home for Lee Cattermole. So,
exactly, yeah.
That's the one thing we're looking out for.
So Lee Cattermole, he went on trial, or he's actually signed up for the season, is he?
I think he's still on trial. I don't know if any contract has been signed yet. And I can imagine that there might be a bit of a wait for that as well, because VVV Venlo play on an artificial turf. And with Lee Cattermole's playing style, I'm not really sure if that's safe for either the pitch or his legs, to be completely honest.
Right. It's not the most natural. I mean, I never thought Lee Cattermole, he'll wind up in Dutch football. What kind of a Dutch side are VVV Venlo?
Well, they have been upsetting the odds, especially the last couple of seasons when they played a quite a sturdy brand of football. You have Stan Falks there, former Sporting Portugal defender, PSV defender, Dutch international as well. They've done a really good job in setting up the team and getting some surprise signings from all over the world. So in that setting, Lee Cattermole would actually fit quite well. They tend to be more defensively organized than actually expansive, which also makes sense. So I think there's some merit in thinking it's a natural fit, actually, which sounds weird because Lee Cattermole was probably the least Eredivisie-like signing that we've had here for ages.
Okay, he's not the only Englishman at VVV if he does join. Jerome Sinclair is with them.
And we expected bigger things of him, didn't we? So it will be interesting to see if those two can match up in an unlikely English partnership and take the Eredivisie by storm.
Right. So far, it hasn't quite happened that way. VVV fresh from 2-4-1 defeats in a row. What other news? Any other big tales that we should know about from the opening 3 rounds of the Eredivisie, Mikael?
Well, the Feyenoord are always a story, being the second biggest club historically in the country. And the good thing about them is that they're still unbeaten in the league. The bad thing is that under Jaap Stam, they're still to win a game. So that is quite interesting. Some quite remarkable signings, including Liam Kelly, who joined him from Reading. Apart from that, the one team that everyone is really looking forward to at the moment is AZ. And they've been defying the odds for ages because they're not that big a club. They have been making headlines for the wrong reasons last week because they're one of the stands had its roof collapsing, and it looks like they can't play there for a year. Those rumors are floating about at the moment, and it seems like they averted a disaster. But where they will play, no one knows, but it will definitely be fun to watch because they have Myron Boadu, a very young striker who seems to be lined up by Ronald Koeman to make an impression soon, as well as Calvin Stengs, a winger slash midfielder that has been bamboozling defenders for a year now.
Brilliant stuff. All right, Miguel, that's excellent. Do hope you'll be calling in again soon with further updates on life there in the Netherlands.
I definitely will, James. Have a good day.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
The wait is finally over. After a long summer, Serie A returns to Premier Sports this weekend. Channel will be showing no less than 6 live games in this opening weekend. And as per last season, Premier will also be airing weekly highlights and preview shows throughout the season. It all begins Saturday at 5 o'clock UK time. Parma taking on Juventus, and that's live on Premier Sports. Premier Sports is available for just £11.99 for Sky and Premier Player customers, and also available on Virgin TV. Great to be back, James Horncastle.
Oh, it is indeed, James.
All summer, you two have been waiting for this show. All your friendly pre-season rubbish, and now finally you're there.
I think I speak for us all when I say we're very excited about Serie A coming back.
Rightly so.
There's so many interesting moves that have happened, so many developments. Stephen Dando says, which team has strengthened best in Serie A, and how will Gianpaolo do at Milan?
Relatively speaking, so outside of the top 6, I think one of the teams that is really interesting and could push to get into Europe and do a bit of a Torino or an Atalanta is Bologna.
Oh,
because I think Bologna have signed very well. They've spent a lot of money, €57 million so far. Joey Saputo, the owner, showing some real ambition after spending some money refurbishing the training ground and the stadium over the last few years. Just this sense that Bologna are better than a team that should be fighting against relegation or mid-table. Obviously, there is this question mark over Sinisa Mihajlovic, who's been diagnosed with leukemia, is still in charge of the team, essentially through video conferencing, taking team meetings, being as present as he can be. But they're one of the teams that I think have strengthened the most and improved a lot. And then I suppose I look at some of the top 6 sides. You have to look at Inter, I think. Just how wide-ranging the recruitment has been there. Strengthened the defence, strengthened the midfield, strengthened the attack, and they're not done yet.
Andrew Cuthbert asks, what are they smoking at Inter Milan if they think Lukaku and Sanchez will bridge the gap with Juve? And can we persuade them to take Jones and Smalling before the effects wear off?
Well, look, I think they're going to show that these two players are better than, you know, what their time at United has been. Because I think both of those players have had very good careers outside of their time at Manchester United. Maybe Manchester United is the aberration in their time as players. It's curious to see Alexis Sanchez at the moment on the cusp of returning to Italy, where he'd be playing in the 3-5-2, which I think is more suited to his skill set. It's the system that he played with Toto Di Natale, Udinese. And, you know, I think the project at Inter, the manager at Inter, certainly doesn't suffer fools gladly, Conte, will be the kind of guy who could reinvigorate them. I think it's interesting because we've been talking about this merry-go-round in Italy with strikers. Once one leaves, the others will follow. But Dzeko signing an extension at Roma was really unexpected. And this is what's precipitated the interest and the move by Inter to get Alexis on, you know, what looks quite a favourable loan from Manchester United. You know, cheap fee when you think of the age of the player and the fact that it would be what, a loan for a couple of years, and United having to share some of the burden of those enormous
apparently
wages.
75% would still be paid by United.
I mean, it could look terrible for United if these two end up firing and, say, win the league with Inter, which I think, you know, we're going to have a very competitive Serie A this season. And if they do anything in the Champions League as well, which, okay, that is a question mark over Conte, but this is a strong side, which has been put together very intelligently, in my opinion. So, yeah, exciting.
Like I said, that's from Pedro on Monday morning with the perfect couple with the photo of Lukaku and Alexis Sanchez or something like that.
Yeah. In their United shirts.
Yeah, you do wonder what they're smoking like Azeta as well, because not so sure that Alexis and Lukaku got on that well when they were playing together.
Mm. Other bits of transfer business. Napoli, have they now confirmed Chucky Lozano, or is that still
pending? Don't think
pending?
It's been confirmed yet, but Napoli want to make a statement in attack. I don't think Lozano would be the last signing that they make in the transfer window. I think they want to bring in a more orthodox, more traditional striker as well, which is quite interesting. Napoli are the only team among the top six who have still got the manager that they had last year. And it's a very good manager in Carlo Ancelotti. So in terms of continuity, yeah, I think they're really up for contention. And Carlo Ancelotti's taken a lot of the pressure onto his shoulders, saying, it's time now. We have to win something. We have to win a Coppa Italia. We have to win the league. We have to do something in Europe. Second place is no longer enough for Napoli fans. And you saw that, remember, last year in the attendances at the San Paolo, which were nothing like they were under Maurizio Sarri. And he was like, we're actually doing really well. We're miles ahead of everyone else who were in third and fourth. So real statement of intent from Carlo. So let's see what they do.
Mario Balotelli, Massimo Cellino, the dream team is on at Brescia.
Oh, this is amazing, James. I'm really excited about this. Brescia fans are excited about this. As we're recording, Balotelli is about to be unveiled to the media, but the time of the press conference keeps being pushed back because they're basically having to hold fans back from the hotel in which this press conference is taking place. Balotelli is from Brescia. Yeah, this is his hometown club. And the fact that he's decided to go and play for them at this juncture in his career. Remember in January, Jules, when he was unveiled at Marseille, he was asked about, will you one day play for Brescia? And he said, only at the end of his career. I mean, some people would say he's at the end of his career. I still think we're going to see something special from Mario this year. He's just turned 29. There's the European Championships around the corner. He's back in Italy where Mancini wants him to be. And yeah, this is the most exciting signing that Brescia have made since the days of Baggio and Pep Guardiola. Sandro Tonali, we've got Balotelli with Donnarumma up front. Alfonso Donnarumma, the guy who used to play within the Inter's youth team. I think it's brilliant.
How did they afford him?
Well, a combination of things. We had Massimo Cellino, the Brescia president, said a few weeks ago that if players are only interested in money, then they've got no chance. They have to play with their hearts, not look for money in their careers. And I think Balotelli's had to climb down maybe a little bit, but not much, because we all know that his agent is Mino Raiola. He knows how to get his clients paid. I think one of the big things is that there's these new tax breaks in Italy. If you've played abroad for 2 years, you can come back, and I think Brescia will only have to pay sort of 50% of his tax on his wages, which it has really facilitated in being able to get this deal done. Also, the way it's structured is that it's 1 year guaranteed, and then it's 2 years if they stay up on the back of that. So they have to stay up, and a lot of it is performance incentivized. So in terms of games played, goals scored, etc. So I think base, it's about $1.5 million a year, which is considerably less what he was on at Nice and in Marseille. But I think obviously, if he wins the Ballon d'Or, which we all expected from Balotelli, and he expected of himself when he started his career, then he'll be making $4 million very soon.
A quick word on Dybala. Fantastic goal for him in the
goal of the preseason.
Goal of the season already.
Because the preseason matters. It's more important than Champions League. But I think as important as the goal, James, was the celebration, which was him popping his collar and showing the number 10 shirt, very important shirt in Italy and particularly at Juventus, patting the badge on his chest. He does not want to go anywhere.
So here's M.A. Moir, who wants to know, have Paratici and Agnelli gone insane, or is there some Juve master plan? Why would they be getting rid of it? Is the question whether it... I mean, you've raised the notion here about whether the man is really in charge of transfer dealings at Juve is a certain CR7. Is that what's behind this attempt to move Dybala out?
I think with Dybala, it's exclusively financial. They need a windfall because of the money that they spent on De Ligt, because of the wages that they paid Cristiano, because of the fee that they paid Cristiano. They did a lot of business in the first half of the transfer window. And whereas in the past, they used to sell before they buy, under Paratici in particular, they buy before they sell. And he then spends the rest of the market basically bringing it back in. And he's been unable to do that. And I think this is one of the big question marks about Juventus going into this season, is if they fail to move these players on, what does that do for the dressing room harmony at that club and the unity of that team, which has been one of the foundation, kind of the keystones to their success over the last few years? We saw Mandzukic come on against Triestina and he was just completely disinterested. He was like, what am I still doing here, essentially? I think that is a real problem for them, both financially and from a kind of morale and harmony point of view. And yeah, in terms of a master plan, I think when you've tried to sell Dybala not once, but twice and failed, it's a complicated situation.
Are PSG going to buy him?
I think they would like to. To replace Neymar, if Neymar was to go, for sure, it would be one of the two that they would bring in or try to bring in. If Neymar stays, it's a bit more complicated, but they still might try to go for him, although that's not what they need the most if Neymar stays. But I think Leonardo really likes the idea of trying to get Dybala into Paris.
Okay. Well, we'll see if he features in the opening weekend of the season, which sees Juve kicking things off 5 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. They are at Parma at the Ennio Tardini Stadium. Yeah. What a classic rivalry that is.
Same fixture as Gigi Mifredi's first game at Juventus. If you want to know more about that, listen to the Golazzo podcast.
So we did a Golazzo, a series that will be returning soon. And one of the stories we did was about the last time Juve made a managerial appointment as unexpected and left field as Maurizio Sarri's. And the example we used was Gigi Mifredi. He began at Parma. It wasn't a season that ended well. We'll see how La Signora get things going.
You heard it here first. Juventus will finish 7th.
Should we put him on the spot for who's going to win Serie A this year then?
Go on.
Inter.
Oh,
I think it's the logical choice at this point. All sorts of other interesting games coming up on the opening weekend. Also on Saturday, straight after that, down at the Artemio Franchi Stadium in Florence, Fiorentina are going to be taking on Napoli. Will Ribery have signed by then?
Well, talks are going on at the moment. I mean, it's a very ambitious signing. And I think this is one of the great things about this summer is the ambition shown by clubs, partly facilitated by these tax breaks, but also just the number of players who are kind of following their hearts. We talked about Balotelli going to Brescia, talked about Nainggolan going to Cagliari, even De Rossi going to Boca, just sort of living a dream like that. I think it's something that's made it a really fun summer to follow. But Fiorentina almost cocked up their first game. It was in the Cup on Sunday. They played Monza, who are now owned by Silvio Berlusconi and Adriano Galliani, who want to take Monza to Serie A. And I think Monza were 1-0 up until, the final 15 minutes. And then it was like Istanbul all over again for Galliani as these kids came off the bench for Fiorentina and ended up winning the first game for Fiorentina at the Artemio Franchi in 6.5 months since that 7-1.
Good Lord.
Against Roma. It again makes you reflect on how bad their end of the season was. And I mean, if Montella had lost that already, the knives would have been out, I suppose.
If they weren't already. Yeah. Sunday night, all the games will be played in the evening because of the extreme August heat. Torino will be up against Sassuolo. Should be interesting. Before that, Torino will be taking on Wolves in the Europa League. We'll get a quick thought or two on that match in a second or two. Right now, though, here's producer Ben.
Thank you very much, Jimbo. It's Lee Price from Paddy Power on the line, listeners. Isn't that exciting? And talking of exciting, Serie A. We've just been mentioning that the champions across Europe have been struggling. It's Parma against Juve on Saturday. What are the odds of another upset?
Yeah, not great for those pre-season hackers for title odds. Although Juventus, I think, will be safe this weekend. They're 1-4 to win away at Parma, who are 17-2, perhaps a shorter price than like what's happened over the last few days. It's 4-1 the draw.
Over to the Bundesliga, Dortmund are looking pretty impressive. Marco Reus was Footballer of the Year in Germany last season, so how about a Dortmund player scooping that award again this season?
Yeah, he's definitely got form, hasn't he? A good shout, although perhaps you're better off looking towards a certain teammate of his. He's actually English, I don't know if anyone's mentioned him before. Jokes aside though, given Bayern are 1-3 to win the Bundesliga this season, despite their poor start, you'd have to favour one of their stars in our betting. Coutinho, of course, will be very popular in the goal-scorer markets here this season. Well, that Robert Lewandowski, he ain't bad, is he?
And finally, over to Ligue 1, where PSG lost and Lyon have made a sensational start. So should we be getting carried away by Silvinho's boys and backing them for the title?
Well, I'm certainly getting carried away. Lyon looked great, didn't they? But our odds makers are not. And perhaps that's why we do our respective roles. PSG, they have lengthened in the title odds, actually, but that's to 1-9. Not exactly appetising. While Lyon have shortened in the betting, but they're still 7-1 to win the title. After those two teams, the next best is Marseille at 50-1. Or, in English, no chance.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply. And when the fun stops, stop. What do you think then? Thursday night, Torino taking on Wolves. What's going to happen, James?
Ooh, I think this is going to be a tight game because Torino under Mazzarri have become very difficult to beat. This was one of the reasons why they got into Europe in the first place, helped by the fact that Milan actually pulled out because of that agreement that they had with UEFA. But Torino have kind of done a Spurs in that they haven't really signed anyone this summer. They've really kind of gone in on the second year of Mazzarri. Everyone knows the system. Everyone gets to know each other. They've got a really good goalkeeper in Salvatore Sirigu, experienced, who basically held his hands up in the interview this week and said, "We are old school Italian team. That is how we play." And they've got Ola Aina, who they signed on a permanent basis from Chelsea, who did really well in this 3-4-2 or 3-4-3 that they played last year. But I think what's been really interesting about them in the Europa League qualifiers so far is the partnership that has began to develop between Andrea Belotti and Simone Zaza. Mm. Because Zaza was very much seen as a lost cause for the last couple of years. Ever since he did that, Jules is, listeners can't see it, but Jules is imitating it now, that penalty run-up in Euro 2016, which... Italy would have won that European Championship had he not, him and Graziano Pelle, not blown those penalties. But he scored 3 goals in the Europa League so far, and he only scored 4 goals in all of last season. So Zaza is back. Mm. Wolves, you have been warned. But I suppose, we might get to see Patrick Cutrone go back to Italy pretty early after his move to Wolves as well. Mm. I think this is going to be a very evenly matched tie. It's going to be great.
Torino, as you mentioned, so strong defensively. Conceding less than a goal a game last season, 37 in 38 matches. But it's going to be interesting. I think the big disadvantage they have is that they are a long way behind Wolves in terms of their preparation. Serie A season hasn't begun yet.
Yeah, absolutely. That's often been the bane of Italian clubs when it comes to getting into group stages of competitions. But they have been playing in the Europa League. They've played already a few rounds and they have got their match fitness. Yeah, again, the delay in the decision from UEFA and Milan about basically Milan being deciding to pull out of Europe didn't help them because all of a sudden they had to get on the phone and say, "Guys, you're on the beach, but you have to be at training a week early."
Stop Denmark in 92, did it?
No, exactly. So there you go. James, Europa League winners 2019-20. It is Torino.
All right. What else is happening in Europe midweek, Jules? You were mentioning Strasbourg against Eintracht Frankfurt.
Yes, which is another interesting game. Another one of the...
Why is it interesting, Jules?
Because it's 2 clubs from the Big Five.
Right, yeah.
So it's good. Strasbourg in their incredible atmosphere at the Stade de la Meno against mm-hmm. Frankfurt, who were very much a surprise package in the Europa League last season, which is the semi-final and only losing to Chelsea on penalties. So they lost Sebastian Haller, they lost Luka Jovic, but they've also signed some interesting players, and Martin Hinteregger, who scored their winning goals at the weekend, was re-signed as well and permanently this time at the back. So I think this one is going to be very interesting and quite entertaining.
Alvaro, just to finish off then with this question to you from Carlos. Came in late, but we just got time before the show wraps. Can you ask, Alvaro, when he thinks Valverde will finally get the sack? What new lows does Barca have to hit after the way they've been knocked out of the Champions League twice? Is this a common feeling?
I think that this is more of a social media feeling than a Camp Nou feeling.
Okay,
Valverde is not as beloved as Luis Enrique, definitely not as beloved as Guardiola, but... Barcelona has won 2 leagues, and in the last league, I believe that they lost only 2 games, and in the 2017-2018 season, they lost only 1 league game. So he's not doing such a bad job to the eyes of Barcelona's president. But it's true that the Champions League, what happened against Liverpool in Champions League, obviously left an indelible scar in Philippe Coutinho, who mm-hmm. is already gone, and Ernesto Valverde as well. So if the results don't go his way over the last 4 or 5 weeks, I can imagine that he will be a candidate to leave.
Okay. You yourself said, though, earlier on that Messi has covered up a lot of issues with Barcelona. So with Leo Messi out for what, the next couple of weeks as well, is the danger that a really terrible start is going to...
I think Barcelona calendar is kind of all right. They are not playing Real Madrid or Atletico yet. And the next game against Betis is a must win. Betis lost the opening game of the season. So I think that Barcelona has a chance to win there and to leave some problems behind. But it's mandatory that the likes of Griezmann and the likes of Dembélé start signing, because Luis Suarez is going to be absent as well as Lionel Messi. And those two French strikers need to sign as soon as possible.
Is it home or away?
Against Betis at home. Okay. Barcelona Betis at home. Last season, Betis beat Barcelona at Camp Nou. Wow. By the way,
when's that game being played?
In UK time, Sunday at 8 p.m.
8 p.m. Nabil Fekir presumably will be featuring for the visitors. That's going to be exciting.
Very exciting indeed.
Huge games then all over Europe. And best of luck following all the action. If you miss out on anything or just are curious to hear our reaction, do join us next Tuesday for another edition of the Totally Football Show's European edition. For now, many thanks to James Horncastle, Julien Leron, and to Alvaro Romeo.
Thank you.
And Mikael and Rafa for dialing in so unexpectedly. Listener, thank you too. We'll be back on Thursday with the regular Totally Football Show. So do join us for that as well. For now, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to the Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter. And make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.